morning, everyone. We are already running late, so I'll be very quick. Before we start, our chair is off sick today. So in terms of rules of National Assembly, clause 130, we have to elect an acting chair. I would call for nominations. Honorable Mabasa.
Proposing that Whip Dooley chair the meeting.
Thank you, Honorable Mabasa. Any second, Honorable Singh?
Yeah, I second that proposal.
Thank you, Honorable Singh. I will call upon Honorable Dooley to take over. Thank you.
I think I can proceed while I'm sitting here because we are going to have a presentation there.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you, honorable members, for showing trust on me. And I would like to welcome the department and the honorable members and our guests. This meeting, it's I hope we've got only one item, which is the department is going to take us through on a third quarterly report.
I believe they are led by the DG. I hope you remember that we were about to have this presentation last year, but due to time constraints, we could not have. So it's a continuation of that program. I think it would be better if we do the ritual thing, the introduction. I will start. I hope we've got new members, but not in Parliament, in this committee. We have just joined us from the DA and the ID. But they will introduce themselves. I will start by introducing myself. Later, I'm Chris Ntuli, the whip of the committee and the member of the ANC. In that order, all the members will be able to introduce themselves.
Shitambo Mabasa, ANC.
Refuse Mashiko for ANC.
Kenneth Mugu from the DA. I'm a new member of the committee.
Good morning, my name is Anif Hussein. I'm from the Independent Democrat.
Good morning, I'm Narin Singh, a member of this committee.
Good morning, Dr. Milanadi from the Economic Development Department.
Duma Gosi, EDD.
Marisa Matsumela, EDD.
Louis Flue from EDD.
Zoe Mumeka from EDD.
Richard Levine from EDD. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Our item number two will be the apologies. So we'd like the secretary of the committee to take us through the apologies.
Thank you, Honorable Ntuli. I've got four apologies here with me. One from the chairperson, who is sick. Honorable Kabaza and Honorable Fanda Merve are attending trade and industry. And Honorable Ngonyama is attending international relations. Portfolio committee. Thank you.
Those are the apologies. Do you say anything, Babu Mabaso? Yeah, no, colleague chair, I propose that we accept the apologies. But while we are on this point, I would propose that the whips, the respective whips, yourself and Whip Hadebe, as well as
of the meetings such that we members are not caught between, so that we are not made to choose which committee to go to, but it must be because of the schedule. So I will propose that as a leadership you look into that in conjunction with the Chief Whip's office. Thanks.
That is Mabasa. Honorable Mabasa, I think you are correct. And in fact, I'm going to do a shosholoza tour with the other parties so that we get correct when are they meeting, so that our meetings do not clash. I think it's a proper suggestion.
I've been
Honorable Hussein.
Chair, thank you very much. I was copied in the email to the committee secretary by Honorable Greg Krumbok, who I understand has also been now appointed to this committee with the two of us. So he submitted a letter of apology. I'm not sure if the committee secretary has received it, so I'm just recording.
Have you received anything from Krumbok?
I did receive. It's just that the instruction I got was that at the moment before the names have been ATC. In the input in the ATC, we should wait and then start accepting those apologies.
Okay, thank you. There is a hand from Mubu and
thank you, Chair. I was just wondering whether the meeting should be starting at 10 o'clock. I'm talking about the concern with regards to traffic getting to town. I know that from the previous committee we used to start meetings at 10 o'clock. It gives a little bit of a leeway for members to be here on time, because earlier than that it's a little bit difficult to get through to town. Thank you, Chair.
I understand your concern, but we will be able to explain in due course. At the moment, there were reasons to start at half past nine, but as a member, you will be try to pursue you for this reason, and you put your concern as well in a proper way. But let's shelve it for now. Mabusi.
Chairperson, just for the record, I'd like to indicate, as I've said to you, that there's a very important briefing by the Auditor General in Scopa, of which I'm a lead member. And if I may be excused, then I will return as soon as that briefing is over.
Okay, Mabusi. Thanks for that. I think let's start. We would like officially to welcome the new members from the ID and from the DA. This is your committee. Then we are expected to participate as such. I'll hand over to the DG to take us through. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. We're going to run through the presentation that we have prepared on the third quarterly report for Economic Development Department. And in this report, we'll be dealing with third quarter performance, where we'll look at performance per program, economic policy development, economic planning and coordination, and economic development and social dialogue. We'll then look at the progress against the estimates of national expenditure targets. We'll look at matters around human resources, financial performance, and then we'll conclude from there. Basically, in the program economic policy development, we submitted a report on employment and inclusive growth for inclusion in the January 2012 Cabinet Lokota discussions. And this report contained a review of progress in achieving the targeted outcomes, the assessment of policy successes and shortfalls, as well as the prospects and actions to mitigate the risks. We also, in collaboration with DPME, and the ILO at the level of system design, conducted another survey on employment reporting for state departments and agencies. survey results demonstrate the need to improve systems for assessing the impact of government actions on employment, both direct and indirect. We've conducted a number of policy platforms. The one is the proposed multi-pronged strategy on youth unemployment, which was workshopped on the 23rd of November 2011. This was workshopped at the level of senior government officials within the DG cluster. And it contains a number of short-term measures focusing on short-term employment schemes, EPWP, CWP, and then it looks at sustainable private and public sector employment, which really would be accompanied by the implementation of skills development and training in line with the various instruments that have been developed by Department of Higher Education and Training and Department of Basic Education, and of course would also be in line with the Skills Accord, which has been signed by the different social partners. And then we also look at some of the factors which make it difficult to for particular individuals, and these would be childcare, teenage pregnancy, and HIV/AIDS, and the steps that need to be taken to address those. Now, this has not been workshopped at the ministerial level yet. It will be presented to ministers, but I'm just giving an indication, and we could have further discussion on that if necessary. We've also developed a draft discussion document on the massive challenge around addressing inequality, and we plan to do more work and discussion engagement around that in the fourth quarter. We also held a workshop on asset ownership and inequality with the Friedrich Ebert Stiftung and Studies in Poverty and Inequality Institute and a number of government officials. And the minister also conducted a policy platform with McKinsey, which looked at the infrastructure planning process, which is currently underway under the auspices of the Presidential Infrastructure Coordinating Commission. In the area of economic planning and coordination, there's been a number of engagements with provincial and local government structures around the new growth path, with KwaZulu-Natal, with the Limpopo Department of Economic Development, Environment and Tourism, at their strategic planning meeting. We've also had visits with the Deputy President on the anti-poverty campaign to Bloberg, local municipality of Limpopo. There's been engagements with the Western Cape Department of Economic Development and Tourism, Free State Local Economic Development, and we've also participated in the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform's initiative, which focuses on prioritizing high-impact projects in 22 rural districts, as well as participation in the presidential intervention in Diatalawa and Maholokwim municipalities in the Free State province. Sector plans is an area of work which now has an economic policy focus, but in terms of spatial plans, a number of important pieces of work which are mentioned here, and that is the approval by the Employment Creation Fund, that's the EU fund administered by the DTI. And specific funding has been approved for the Rise Up Cooperative Bakery Holdings, and there is currently in this regard a pilot in the Matsikama Durambayan municipality underway. Also, the Fisheries Unit of Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries, whereby approval has been given for an EPWP aquaculture project for Durambayan, and a memorandum of understanding has been initiated with DAF in this regard. There's also spatial economic master planning framework and guidelines, which the department is currently focusing on developing in consultation with the CSIR. And then there's various projects in the Eastern Cape and Western Cape. In terms of the green economy strategy and interventions, there is a green jobs report, which the IDC has developed. There's also engagements with the Department of Energy on the Renewable Energy Independent Power Producer Program, engagement with a number of key departments, which include energy, public enterprises, rural development, and National Treasury on the rollout of the Solar Water Heater Initiative, and then the engagement with the Blue IQ to discuss the establishment of the Provincial Green Economy Unit, which focuses on local economic development and SMME development. And there's also been a workshop around the green economy with Kusatu and the Cape Business Chamber here in Cape Town. There's also work which has been done around harnessing partnerships to promote agricultural development for small and medium-scale black farmers, with a particular focus actually on dairy cooperatives. In terms of our special financing, a total of 2.4 billion was dispersed during this quarter, 184.4 million through the IDC Distress Fund, 343.4 million through the UIF bond, transfers to SAMAC amounting to 22.5 million, transfers to the IDC amounting to 17 million, and IDC disbursements amounting to 1.8 billion rand. In the area of leveraging state expenditure and procurement, this work is spearheaded by the DTI. And in terms of the designated sectors, work has been done around the Bureau of Standards Technical Specifications, which have been published for public comment and which focus on the local content requirements for the different designated sectors. On the engagement with the development finance institutions and the economic regulatory bodies, we do have our regular governance meetings, and we have shared that with the committee in the past, the kind of format which we use for the DFIs and the ERBs to report to us on a quarterly basis so that we can monitor and track their progress. And there's also progress in the small business financing merger. And we did the report to the committee last week, which focuses on the progress which we've made in this area. In economic development and dialogue, there have been a number of dialogue and capacity building engagements, including on the training layoff scheme and distress funding. Presentations were made on progress in the implementation of the framework agreement in KwaZulu-Natal, Eastern Cape, Northern Cape, and Limpopo. There's also been a meeting with a community constituency to discuss how we can engage with stakeholders. And there's also been engagement and presentation in Eastern Cape around a turnaround strategy for the Dimbaza Foundry. I think the key highlight, though, in this area has been the major accords that were signed between the social partners, firstly on local procurement, where business community, the unions and government have made major commitments around local procurement, which obviously does also have this focus on the DTI designated sectors, but in order to enhance the overall success, business has also made a number of commitments in this regard. Also, the Green Economy Accord was signed on the 17th of November, prior to the COP17, again with significant commitments being made by all the social partners in a number of different areas, including the rollout of the Solar Water Heater Program. We've also had a number of capacity building workshops with organized labor in KwaZulu-Natal, Eastern Cape, Northern Cape, and Limpopo. We've also had engagements on productivity with the ILO, currently South Africa, organized labor and communities, and there have been a number of interventions to create or save jobs, including with the Clothing Bargaining Council, and then there's been specific engagements with SIPAO and Usatu and the employer to look at particular interventions in the light of proposed job cuts in the paper sector. There are engagements also which have been held with stakeholders, and we participate in a panel discussion on job creation at the FEDUSA Congress as well. In terms of the implementation of the framework agreements and social pacts, also a presentation at the ILO Labour Jobs Pact workshop, which EDD led. Moving then to the E&E targets, so that we can just track progress. In the third quarter, we set targets per quarter, and I think generally we're looking all right in this regard. We've achieved the targets in most of the areas. We've exceeded the targets in terms of the engagements we've held with provincial and or local government. And we also have exceeded the third quarter targets for the value of special financing facilitated for small business, targeted growth sectors and companies in distress, which I already covered the detail thereof. And I think in terms of the sector plans, that's where we obviously need to pay some attention going into the fourth quarter. But in the area of spatial plans, we're pretty much on track, exceeding the target, as well as interventions to create or save jobs, policy platforms, slightly behind targets in the economic development agreements area, which we'll need to pay attention to going into the fourth quarter as well. In terms of our staffing progress, we have 129 funded posts for this year. We filled 61 of those on a permanent basis and 39 on contract. So we are behind, but I think as the slides going forward in the presentation show, we do have a plan to reach the target by the end of the financial year. On the employment equity, there is a breakdown for SMS, middle management, levels 1 to 8, in terms of race, gender, and disability. And we have 88% of the department, which is currently black, and we have 59% of the department female. The area of concern, which I know the committee has been quite passionate about, and which we certainly are not dispassionate about ourselves, we can talk to the challenges, is the area of disability, where we are behind in reaching the target. We also have the summary statistics in terms of permanent and contract employees, which we've discussed on a number of occasions as well, and we've broken that down on the basis of male and female as well, and this just gives an indication that in terms of the SMS, we would be slightly behind the target because we do need to ramp up to 50-50. And we are behind in that particular target. In the area of recruitment, as I indicated, we do have a strategy and plan to recruit relevant and skilled staff by the end of 2011-12 financial year. There's a reporting system we put in place, which goes to the executive authority on a monthly basis. We were able to appoint 11 people, 3 permanent, 8 on contract, during the number of interviews having been conducted to fill the positions of economist, senior economist, policy analyst, senior administrative officer, accounting clerk, and director IT, and recommendations have been made. We do. We should emphasize that, as we've discussed with the committee before, the big challenge is to find people with the appropriate economic skills to fill the positions in a meaningful way that will allow people recruited into the department to run with the programs on the work plan and to ensure that we have the necessary value add. And I think that is really the challenge, is to get the people with the required economic skills to make the kind of impact that we're looking for in the execution of the work plan. On the financial side, we have provided information to the committee, which is based on the December 2011 India monitoring reports, which are also Section 44 PFMA reports, which are signed on a monthly basis and submitted to the National Treasury. In terms of the total adjusted budget of 598.3 million for the 2011-12 financial year, expenditure in the first 9 months amounted to 449.9 million, or 75% of the adjusted appropriation. The spending rate is equal to the 75% norm on straightforward projections, where the annual total budget is expected to be spent equally through the year. The big challenge, though, as we know, is around compensation of employees and the fact that we aren't fully staffed, and that would explain why, if we look at the program performance, our actual expenditure in economic policy and economic development and dialogue is far behind. And economic planning and coordination is slightly better staffed than the other, but of course that's the program where we undertake transfers to the various agencies and regulatory bodies which report to the Ministry and Department of Economic Development. So again, it's really compensation of employees, the recruitment of staff, which puts a brake on our expenditure. Nevertheless, we have, before I get there, to indicate that in terms of revenue collection, we have exceeded the budgeted revenue of 243 million. Of course, this goes to Treasury, returns to the fiscus, and the main generator of revenue in our case is really fines from penalties from the Competition Commission, as well as dividends from the IBC. And the revenue projections have been exceeded mainly due to the Pioneer Food settlement. So that just explains how come we have exceeded those revenues anticipated by 205%. Again, if we can indicate that there are certain commitments which we have at the end of December 2011 amounting to 4.3 million, but we have also earmarked a number of projects for the remainder of the 2011-12 financial year, which we believe will considerably improve our expenditure performance, and these include support for a credit bureau for small business, support for a shared service center in support of small business, a business incubator for the social economy, costs which we will towards supporting the Kula Sama IDC small business merger, SMME index on regulatory constraints, a 30-day payment campaign. There is a partnership which we are currently developing with the Department of Environmental Affairs around a green village pilot project focusing on biodigesters. And we also have the BITS capacity building program, which we have reported on before. It's a program we began in the previous financial year, which we rolled out to provinces, and this time there is a focus on local government, and the course program is currently underway. and then there's a number of labor, government, and civil society workshops. So this is really the focus of our spending for the remainder of the financial year. In conclusion, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members, I think we should indicate that there are a number of areas where we have had success and achievement, where we would need to continue consolidating the work that we've done in the third quarter, obviously trying to get finalization and sign off at the ministerial level around the approach which we are articulating around youth unemployment, work around the green economy, implementation of the accord, implementation of the solar water heater rollout, and then in the I think it's also important for us to indicate that we did contribute to COP17. There was an exhibition stand which we co-hosted with the IEC, and in the South African part of the exhibitions there was the identification of 10 legacy projects from the COP, and part of our stand focused on the solar water heaters, where we solicited pledges from people attending the conference, but also from business. And we managed to raise around 750,000, which enabled us to put together the resources and funding for a donation of 500 solar water heaters to the community of Grafton. So I think that was quite an exciting initiative, which we were able to do at the COP. And in terms of the establishment, again, to emphasize that while we have made considerable progress, the real challenges focus on finding the right people with the right level of skills to deliver the quality of work that we require to drive our various job creation initiatives across our various programs. And then just to indicate, as we did last week, that we have now launched, our website has been launched, and just in case some of the honorable members didn't get the web address, that's where we can go into our website. And I did encourage the honorable members as well, once they visited the website, also to give us some feedback on things possibly that honorable members would like to see on the website that maybe they're not seeing on the website, so that we can also strengthen the website going forward. Chairperson, thank you very much for this opportunity.
Thank you very much, Professor Levin, for your presentation. I would like to give the members an opportunity. I would like to give the members the opportunity to ask questions for clarities, comments, all that. Thereafter, we'll give the department an opportunity to respond or give clarities. I will start with Baba Mabasa Hussein. Honorable Hussein, Honorable Tsotetse, Honorable Mubu, in that order.
Thanks, Comrade Chair. just expressing appreciation on receiving the input. My comments, some of the comments that I will make are not entirely new. But let me start with congratulating the department on the website launching. Well done, DG. Thank you very much. And when we go into the input, some of the areas that I want to ask undertook an oversight study. There was a time when we visited Orlando East Industrial Park, MDNE Industrial Park, you know, those parks in Soweto. And we observed some of the challenges that are being faced by the small business there, but also appreciated the progress made. In a way, our tone indicated that we are committed to supporting and working with them, so that by so doing, if although I'm citing Soweto in this instance, but if we take that approach nationally, we can then make impact in terms of raising the small business to rise up towards the big business, to close that gap, particularly because, particularly where we find that it is black businesses that are located at those lower steps. So I would like a comment on that to say, since that visit, where are we? Because if we are not careful, it is very easy to have a visit as an incident and not have it as a part of a process. And then the second point is a concern that if we as a department cannot be able to fulfill the requirement of employing people with disabilities, it's even going to be more difficult with the private sector. So I'm saying this because we are closer to the people. I don't appreciate why we are not able to get people with disabilities to fill up the gaps that we have in terms of employment. And then on the part where, because we are a lead department in terms of addressing the challenges of job losses, and if we ourselves have posts that are not filled, for whatever reason we may give, we must ask ourselves and say, do we think that these reasons will hold if the public was listening to us? I mean, let's assume that South Africa, where Whitey is listening to us, is having this input. Do we think that they will appreciate our reasons for not employing in view of this huge unemployment rate? Because you see, if we look at it that way, we will be urged to do it better. There is this institution of people with degrees that are unemployed. I don't know whether that can also not assist. There are also organizations, although it's an industry, it's a firm, the SHAP, located in Soweto, which employs people with disabilities, and they do very well. It would do us good to pay them a visit, so that we see if there are certain things that we can share with them. Colleague Chair, thank you very much for the opportunity.
Thank you. That was Baba Mabasa, Honorable Hussein.
Chair, thank you very much. Yes, I completely agree. It's a very interesting report that shares a lot of information about this department. I have just a few questions that I would like to ask, most of which are points of clarity, as you will understand. page 6 you referred to some various projects in the Eastern Cape and the Western Cape, and I'm hoping if you could just expand on that and just explain what those projects were. I'll take you then to page 8, and on the IDC distress funding. May I ask you that, and for my own benefit, how do you actually recover these monies from companies that are assisted through the distress fund, and on what basis is it recovered? Just so that we can understand how is it that you help, the IDC helps those small businesses in distress, and speak to the recovery of it. And then page 9, on the local procurement commitments and the accord that were signed, is there some sort of a monitoring system that you have in place that you would go back at some point just to assess the success of that accord and whether or not there has been an increase in the amount of goods procured locally, so that you are able to determine whether or not that accord is being properly implemented? On page 10, Chair, perhaps this is a question that should be going to finance, but I'll ask it anyway, and perhaps the DG will be kind enough to guide me. Sorry, I don't think it's page 10. It refers to the one on fines and penalties from the Commission. Competition Commission. Which one is that? Nonetheless, it's page 13. I follow that story with interest, and I'm glad to hear that some of the money is coming back from those companies that have been involved in collusion. And the question in my mind is that if there are these companies who are paying these massive fines, is there any way that those funds could be ring-fenced to benefit those people who have been the victims? Or can those funds be ring-fenced for other economic development initiatives? Maybe, for example, the development of small bakeries. So that monies are not lost somewhere in the first place, but you can actually see a real value of it. And again, I say I'm not sure whether that's a question for the DG or for the finance department to answer. Page 21, you speak about the support for credit bureau for small businesses. If you would kindly just expand on that for me, just a little. And the last one, Chair, the contribution of the 500 solar water heaters, which was a very interesting initiative, and I must congratulate the department for that. May I ask how you determine the allocation of the solar water heater? Always a very nice politically hot potato question to ask. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, that was an honorable saying. When I would so deadly.
Thank you, Chair. On page 8 regarding the IDC Trust Fund, if we can get the breakdown of the allocation for the respective beneficiaries, also know who the beneficiaries are. And page 10 on engagement on productivity, that is especially Profit South Africa. I mean, Profit South Africa, to what extent can we measure our success to support Profit South Africa when we have so much stuff from China with predatory prices, and to an extent that our local businesses are closing down, that's adding to the number of unemployment. On page 22, that is the donation of 500 solar water heaters to the community of Broadville. What factors did you consider to identify this community? Because we have so many in it, but we know that we cannot donate to all of them. But if you can know, what factors did you consider to identify this community? And on the credit of skills, establishment of EDD, that is progress made by challenges to maintain people. This one is really frustrating, because we have on the other side Kwasaki saying there's no such, we have so many people who are unemployed, to an extent that they go to other countries to, you know, sell their labor. And again, in the same breath, we have so many graduates who, some of them have experience, they've worked before in different companies or departments, but they're still not successful whenever they apply. And it is unfortunate that you're not speaking in this interview, so it is difficult for us to argue, you know, to get to the argument as to why do we continue not to identify the skills. And on the three people who have, whose contracts expired, we talk here about the shortage of skills, and we go to an extent of headhunting. What skills they possess, and was it not possible for the department to renew their contract, taking into consideration the fact that we're still not able to identify the relevant skills that you're looking for?
Thank you, Honorable
Thank you, Chair. Much of what I was going to ask about has probably been dealt with by my colleagues. But just one question in addition to what Honorable Mabasa asked in connection with the recruitment of qualified staff. When you say that you cannot find people that are properly qualified to take up appointments, I mean, it's a little bit of a surprise that in a country where unemployment is so high, with graduates with degrees and not being able to get jobs, it's just surprising that you can say you can't find people with the right qualifications. I mean, all across the skills sector, there's people without jobs but are well qualified. But even then, if these are strategic positions, why would you look outside? I mean, get people from outside that can do the job. Because, I mean, you cannot be hindered from doing your job because you can't get people locally, but why don't you get them from outside then? Thanks.
Let us move DG from this side. You spoke about the coordination through the three spheres. I'm asking this question, DG, because the economic development at a provincial level was there all these years. It's only the national one which came into being in 2009. So if you are talking about the coordination, I think you need to tell us more about the meat of this coordination. Because when you go to the province, you find that provinces are still doing as usual as they've been doing before. And the LEDs, when you go to Metro at Tetewini, you find that when you speak about the national thing, no, they're still doing what they've been doing all along. And we want to check here, aren't we just ticking the boxes we have coordinated, we have met? Whom have you met? Whom have you met here? I mean, we are trying to get the quality of this, particularly the new growth part. Are they starting? Are they implementing? If they are implementing, who is monitoring hands-on to say the new growth part here? I'm saying this. You remember that people live in a ward. It can be a national competence or responsibility, but the people, the real people you can touch they are living at a ward. So it is very important when you talk about this coordination and planning to see what is happening at a local level where people live. You have spoken to say you are going to embark on a youth employment and green economy, and it's very interesting. I wish you can prepare that report in our next meeting, because I'm itching now to know what is there, what is going to happen.
other thing, Chairperson, is this, you said you appointed 11 and then 7 termination. Is it not countering what we have done? If you can explain that you employed 11 but 7 terminated, can you expatiate on that one? Please, can you, if you can respond to all of these questions, then we have a follow-up question thereafter. Unless Mashila, Honorable Mashila, want to Mashikoya, refer if you want to.
Thank you, Chairperson. My question will be on page 5, the second bullet from the bottom, that talks about the 22 rural districts where you are working with the rural development. How spread are these? Are they covering all the provinces? And then the next question is on page 19. Your own program on economic development and dialogue. To me, that is a very important community-based program. I don't know your program. So far, just new and here once off. The level of understanding that after the first quarter and looking at the main budget, at the end of the fourth quarter, I think there will still be understanding. Thank you.
That was Honorable Mashiko. Mabasa want to have a last bite.
Thanks, Comrade Chair. One of the points is what the Honorable Mashiko has raised, the one of saying, are we not running into a danger of serious underspending? And if we can end up with that, we're going to struggle to defend the position. You know, as a department, what are we going to say to the people? On the other point is the AG's concerns, Colleague Chair, that I want to assume that continually we do take a pause and look at the concerns that have been raised by the AG, and at the same time look at the concerns raised by the committee, because that way, as we move forward, we are able to check what threats are generically always threatening us, so that we take appropriate action. And then on page 21, slide 21, on page 21, when we list, under those lists there, should I understand that community workshops and small businesses, as well as cooperatives, should I understand that they are indirectly covered in those listings, or do we want to be very particular and also create a bullet where we say cooperatives? I'm saying this because we are not yet mastering the creation of cooperatives, either as government or as community members. But from our side as government, we have got to harp on that, because that will also assist in the distribution of wealth, so that we don't find we assist only those people that emerge as individual entrepreneurs, but we strive to create a broad pool of cooperatives members. Thanks, Comrade Chair.
Thank you, Mabaso, and Mama Tikeleti wanted to
The monitoring system for the Accords, very
very critical question. We are in the process of developing a comprehensive approach to monitoring the implementation of all four social accords which we signed last year. So not only the local procurement and green economy accords, but also the skills accord and the basic education accords. We do need to develop an overarching approach, but also one which will be implemented in collaboration with the social partners, because of course all of us need to own these accords. But we do have a process underway where we've identified all the commitments, who's responsible, and we are in a position to move towards monitoring now, but we just need to get the agreements exactly on the methodology and approach and collaboration of the different constituencies in the monitoring. Obviously, it's fine to sign an accord, which is implicit in your question, but then how do we make sure that the implementation takes place? And of course, the implementation is a joint responsibility. There's a lot of onus on government if one looks into the details of the accord, but it also can only happen if we all come to the table or come to the party of implementation. So government, business, labor, as well as the community constituencies all have a role to play to make sure that these accords are successfully implementing. Well, I think Mr. Momeka will give the regulatory requirements which make it difficult, well, actually impossible for us to reinvest the revenues in specific projects. Other than the agro-processing fund, which was agreed upfront as part of the settlement with Pioneer, the revenues generated through fines returned to the fiscus, and there is no mechanism in place for us to utilize those monies for reinvestment in projects. That money would be allocated by the National Treasury. I think Mr. Momeka can elaborate on that. Just to indicate around the 500 solar water heaters, the COP was in KwaZulu-Natal, in Durban. So what happened is consultation took place between the Minister, the Premier, and the President. And that led to the identification of Groutville, and we worked with the district municipality in terms of the actual detailed allocation of the solar water heaters at community level. So in a sense, we provided a facility, we engaged with the Premier from the province hosting the COP, and we also consulted with the President, and then the decision was taken. And the actual final detailed allocation is really in the hands of the district municipality. I think Mr. Matsomela will talk to some of the details around the challenges on the skills thing. I think, as the members are saying, we have discussed this quite extensively, and I've tried to introduce this issue of qualification versus skill, which I think is also an important aspect of the challenges we face in terms of getting the right people. Certainly people who are qualified, who have degrees even in economics, but then getting them to the level that is required to make the kind of policy in particular contributions that are required has been very challenging. So I think the different colleagues will comment on that. The question, Honourable Chairperson, about whether things are happening at a sort of business as usual level in provinces and metros. I think the real question underlying that is when we have these engagements with provinces, with metros, is there any impact? Is there a real uptake of the new growth path framework, which translates into actual implementation? I'm sure one could safely say that there's unevenness in this regard. We do have, though, through the MINMEC and the technical MINMEC structures in place to also try and ensure that decisions taken around the new growth path, we include decisions taken by cabinet at the various mahotla, are communicated and work programs put in place to ensure that there is actual implementation. So I think in certain areas, for example, if we take the green economy, there has been a concerted effort on our part to work with the IDC and the provinces to ensure that there is an uptake around green economy projects across the country. But I think that is the critical structure as well, is the MNMEC structure. So over and above the actual presentations which we make at provincial and municipal level, there is the MNMEC which we use as a coordinating mechanism. On the youth employment, I think Dr. Mahetla can give more information, but I would just emphasize that in order to sort of make a presentation at this level, it would be important for us to get sort of the ministerial mandate, if I can put it that way, because as I've indicated, it is still a matter that will be tabled before the cluster of ministers for their input and ultimately sign-off. In order to take it into broader forums, including Parliament. But I think Dr. Mahetla would be able to give the broad headlines around which we are focusing this youth employment strategy. Yes, it is true that we employ 11 and we lose 7, and that kind of does cancel things out. Not necessarily unique to our department, but the issue of staff retention is a challenge across the board in the public service. But yes, we are disappointed to have lost some critical staff members, who, particularly those who are on their permanent employ, and particular individuals amongst those who left, is a big loss. On the 22 rural districts, Mr. Nkosi and Dr. Mahetla could give more information, but really these are spread across the country, and they are districts that were identified by Cabinet in July of 2011 for a focused intervention led by Department of Rural Development and Land Reform, where on the basis of the work done spearheaded by the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform, as well as Department of Cooperative Governance, a number of poor municipalities were identified by Cabinet for this kind of intervention. Yes, I think certainly, and Mr. Momeka could amplify as well, will certainly amplify on some of the small business initiatives that we are looking to spend in terms of our spending plan. But the level of underspending in development and dialogue, correctly identified as a critical program, really again comes from the staffing position in that particular branch, and the fact that we do have significant gaps in terms of recruitment there. but we have made a bit of progress since then, and at least one critical managerial position has been filled, the offer has been accepted, and we're hoping that the candidate will start by the beginning of the next financial year and provide some leadership as well in the branch. But maybe if we could just run up the line there and allow Ntokozo to begin with some of the details that were requested around Eastern Cape and Western Cape, and then we'll move up Dr. Mahetla, Mr. Nkosi, Mr. Masomela, if he has anything as well, that would be fine, and Mr. Momeka, the CFO. Thank you.
Thank you, DG. Honourable members, there have been three projects that ED was supporting
two in the Eastern Cape and one in the Western Cape. In the Eastern Cape, the first one was the Phyto Energy Biodiesel Initiative. And here, EDD played a role in securing 39 million rand to the Employment Creation Fund for the project. And EDD is part of a steering committee that has held various meetings, and the amount of 39 million rand has been released to Phyto Energy, and this is done in the third quarter. The second initiative in the Eastern Cape is called Inner Wind, and it's a wind energy initiative in Gunu in the Eastern Cape. And the department has provided support to this project, and the focus really has been in playing a coordinating role in the process with the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform to ensure that a long-term lease was attained so that Inner Wind can submit an application to the DOE's renewable energy program for them to become a power provider. And then the third project was in the Western Cape, and it's called Ibubezi Gas in the West Coast District, and it's a joint initiative between Standard Bank and Forest Oil. And once again, EDD played a coordinating role here in trying to secure, in unblocking, some government processes for the project.
I think in terms of the employment issue, the problem we have is we're a new department. That means that a lot of these positions we're hiring in at a very senior level. Sorry, and you can stop me if this has been said before because I haven't been in this discussion. But that we are really looking for people often at mostly a chief director level or above. And to just hire people for that level is difficult because, firstly, if they're any good, they're in other jobs that they like. So we need that coincidence between us advertising and people wanting to leave where they are for some reason. The second thing is that we need people who are both competent in terms of the theory and the policies around economics, preferably. They need to understand the practicalities facing business, so pure theory doesn't help us a lot. They need to be able to work with stakeholders, and they need to have a developmental perspective and commitment. They need to be super people, in other words, and we're not. It's difficult. There are people like that out there, but like I said, at that senior level, they tend to be doing things they want to be doing. So we have to convince them to come over. We do get, I think this where you can see the issue is this. Junior people, we have very many very good people. One of them is sitting to my left. And we can get people who have, straight out of university with an excellent MA, right, in economics. But to go above that becomes very difficult. And I do think that because these are permanent positions, we are trying to be quite tough. Because it's not, as we all know, you can't just employ somebody and then, if they don't shape up, ship them out in the public service. So there's that pressure on us that makes it perhaps risk averse. And I do think a particular problem for us is that there's very relatively few black people or women who study economics. If you've ever been to an economics workshop, you'll know what I mean. So it's quite hard to find people like that because they just don't graduate with a degree as well. Particularly, they weren't graduating 10 or 15 years ago, which is the level of people that we need for those senior positions. And I think for many of them, economists can get very good jobs in the financial sector that do pay. The financial sector is the best paid sector in the country. So we're competing with the banks that pay extremely well. I personally think the public service senior management is very well paid, but the banks are the highest paid sector in the whole economy. And that's who we compete with. So that just adds to the pressure for us. In terms of the other questions, so the 22 districts were chosen by, in fact, the infrastructure cluster. The infrastructure cluster looked at which regions, districts have the worst household infrastructure, like less electricity, decent housing, water, and so on. Basically, they're all in the so-called communal areas, which is the former Bantam Central Homeless Tribe. There's no good word for these things, but that's where they are. So they're not in all provinces, because it's an objective measure of where was the least investment historically, and we know where that was. In terms of the youth policy...
Should I just do a sort of broad outline?
Yes.
Okay. Look, it basically says there's two ways. Youth unemployment in this country, the worst unemployment is for people aged between 22 and 29. Everywhere in the world, youth unemployment is around twice as high as the average. That's true here, too. The thing is, we have extraordinarily high unemployment compared to other countries, so that's why youth unemployment here is extremely high. It's just under 50% overall, basically, depending on what they're shooting. Now,
there are two reasons for that then. One argument is just the higher the unemployment level overall, the higher unemployment will be for youth, because it's sort of a queuing effect. The young people come last to the job market, so they're the last to get into jobs. And I have to say, I think the evidence is that what supports that argument is that the sectors that have grown most rapidly have the largest share of young people employed in them. But there are also life cycle issues that are specific for youth. These tend to be around, obviously, training and education, but also getting experience and how you get over that first hurdle. That employers see having a job with someone else is a good signal that you're a good worker. So getting that first job can be more difficult. There's also issues around child care for women and teenage pregnancy that are specifically more problematic for young women who tend to be having kids in their 20s. And then there's the issue of HIV/AIDS, which can prevent people from getting work, being able to work rather. It's illegal to discriminate, but some people, if you're too sick to work. And then practice infection rates are obviously for younger people. So what we're saying is, in terms of the critical thing is overall employment creation, and it's actually, we're not really looking at new policies here. We're saying, how can we implement the growth path policies in ways that ensure adequate and maximum benefits for young people? In the short run, you've got basically the public employment schemes, such as the Community Work Program and EPWP, both of which have very ambitious targets. Treasury is trying to engage on a wage subsidy already before the strategy came out, in fact, at MedWAC. And there are some other programs like that. The Rural Youth, MIDA has some programs, the Chicago Green Day, and so on. In the longer term, the issue is, how do we ensure adequate education and training that's linked to the needs of the jobs drivers? For instance, particularly in the public service, high levels of professionals, how do we make sure people have those skills? But also try and ensure that there are more entry-level jobs where possible. So in construction, we're suggesting we might look at just a plain quota to say, for each new construction project, can you have a quota of entry-level people? Now, the problem there, and we've raised this explicitly, is that you want to balance the regulatory requirements with the desire to get young people in. In other words, you don't want to make the regulatory burden so hard that people just don't do the project at all. So we're going to have to get that balance right. In terms of the life cycle issues, like I said, it is about, we're suggesting, in terms of child care, rapidly expanding child care, preferably linked to ECD, but not only that, but that we need models that can expand child care. Some of those could be based in the public employment schemes, like the CWP, and Karagude could, for instance, start looking also at child care. Now they only do literacy, but they're saying that the pool of people who need literacy training is getting smaller, so rather than employing fewer people, we could try and shift that to just basic child care issues. And education around teen pregnancy and HIV/AIDS in collaboration with the relevant departments. I mean, the one thing I forgot to say was a pillar of this will be, if you've looked at the Green Paper on post-secondary education and training, just very ambitious targets for 2030 that would in themselves help in terms of youth unemployment, because they would vastly increase the number of people in further education and training and then higher education and training by 2030. But we have to engage with the department on how that will be implemented. That Green Paper came out after we had done the first draft on the youth. It only came out about 2 weeks ago.
Gigi, I think the other points were sufficiently covered, but more on the 22 districts. I think it more will be an issue of improved coordination and issue of decision-making. Because largely you find that there can be lots that can be done in terms of coordinating the different districts, because they face similar challenges to a large extent, and also of coordination of implementation. So I think there is an opportunity of being able to coordinate the 22 districts, but on the other side, platforms in terms of engaging the association of local government as well. There's an opportunity to be able to pick up on that. But for some of the issues raised, I think sufficiently they will cover the issue.
Thanks, DG. Thanks, and our chair members. Let me talk firstly about the issue of the department and the challenge that somehow I found that I had to deal with honestly. From the reasons that have been given in terms of trying to recruit and so forth, the fact that if I don't want to find myself only employing people with disabilities within education only, and also linking them to a lower level. the situation, what we are doing about the situation as well, is that as I reported last time to the committee as well, to say that we're looking at trying to also create a new environment as well. We have to resort back to that within the administration as well, how can we really at least cover this matter as well. We have liaised with a number of organizations subsequently since the committee also advised us to do that as well. And we're in a position where we are during the end of the day, this quarter, we should be able to have appointed somebody in that area as well. We are looking at the issue of the regional accommodation in terms of saying when you appoint somebody else who's blind, you should have those devices that are just in terms of the person working in those particular issues. So we are in a position where we are looking at doing that, and we should be able to, by end of the quarter, have appointed somebody on that position as well. That in terms of the issue of skills, I think that they have been covered sufficiently as well. Maybe perhaps we should indicate that within that situation we don't have much problem, because that's a transversal kind of experience issues. It's easier to get somebody within that situation to be able to fill those positions. The challenges that I have is mainly in the line function. What we did, we embarked on not only advertising but also the targeting and so forth. Hence, you see in the slides that where we indicating that we already made recommendations, especially if you look at it about certain positions in the land function, those emanated from the headhunting process that we have backed on. So we are trying all the strides to make sure that at least we are trying to add up the numbers. But we do recognize the fact that our piece might not be as well as we have liked to.
Thanks, Louis. I don't know if you want to add anything.
Just a commitment that the point will get back to the committee with the additional detail of the question for the IDC distress fund disbursement, which is there.
Making a commitment to give the detailed list on the IDC disbursement. Submit it to the committee secretary. Mr. Momeka has got a few things to add.
Okay, thanks, DG. Thank you very much, Honorable Deputy Chair and Honorable Members. Just, I'll touch base on a number of things. Firstly, let's start with the fines. The revenue that gets generated through fines that are imposed and confirmed by Competition Commission and Tribunal must be surrendered over to the National Revenue Fund. And PFMA is quite clear on how such fines, the promptness of surrendering over, and how are they supposed to be withdrawn from National Revenue Fund. Firstly, we are dictated that the Act uses must. It says we must surrender the money into the National Revenue Fund that has been paid into our accounts. And secondly, Section 15 then gives guidance, and Section 15 of the PFMA on how withdrawal from the National Revenue Fund are actually made. It says it must be by a piece of legislation. These are finance bills introduced to the parliament and confirmed by yourself. So the department is quite limited when it comes to that. However, perhaps a budget process can be put in place, include those commitments. After all the all the funding requests have been put into one big national basket, decisions are made, and that's how we tend to get funds appropriated to development. So I just needed to explain that one. When it comes to the issue of credit bureaus, yes, we've identified a number of projects that we have earmarked funding for, and there is a plan to work to
together with National Treasury as well as DTI to establish a credit bureau for small businesses, because there isn't one now. And the aim is basically to avail information that will be used by the credit lenders on the risk that is at hand. It is believed that it will assist in building up a credit history, and you know, when there are those good small business owners who have got a good credit history, then it should allow such businesses to be granted credit, and we are hopeful that this will have an impact on job creation. This will be in partnership also with other entities, other than National Treasury and DTI, but the Credit Providers Association as well as the Credit Bureaus Association. We will only be availing funds to initiate or to kickstart this project. It is expected that the project will be self-financing, since the users of that data will be buying the data from the association. So I just wanted to touch base on that one. But I must also emphasize that, another project for small businesses. There is also another project that we are putting in place where we joined with the South African Institute of Chartered Accountants, a number of unemployed graduates that the honorable members have made mention of will be identified, and around about 100 of them will be given practical training, because they do have theoretical training. And that information, that pool of 100 unemployed graduates will actually be used more as a shared services center to support small businesses on financial statements. So we believe that will be a plus on SMEs. On the, let me touch base also on the Proudly South African. There is money that we have also put aside just to come up with a campaign, work with Proudly South African. The members are aware that there is a local procurement accord which mainly supports, you know, goods, procurement of goods that are produced, that were produced in South Africa. So we think Proudly South African as an entity under DTI should be a good partner, and we are committing some funds as well in doing that. Understanding. Yes, it's our department is an employee-oriented department. If you look at our budget, it's driven by employment. So if we continue to employ, then we really will be in a position to spend the budget at the rate at which we would want to. But I must indicate that some of the projects were actually identified as an opportunity to make sure that the budget is used, and it's also used for the purpose of the vote. You know. So it's after a thorough analysis of our spending and also identifying areas that we believe will add value in the competence of the department. Thank you.
Thank you, DG. I'd like to make some few comments that particularly with the responses from Dr. Neva Maheka. I'm very disappointed that we thought by having you there you will come up with the solutions of the problems we have. But what we have done, you are going back to what we knew, that we've got females who are having children at hoping that you come up with a solution of how to overcome. Then if you come to the members and throw it back to them, it is very disappointing. But I would like to members to have some follow-up questions or even new questions. I'll start by asking who is coordinating employment across the other departments? Who is coordinating the employment? Because we are saying our core business is to fight unemployment. And we find that when we ask the departments about their share to fight unemployment, and you can't get excuses. Now let me ask, who particularly in this, I don't want to say it's a labor what, I'm asking in this department, in the EDD, who is coordinating the employment? Maybe you will be able to follow that second. And I was hoping that this department, because as I've said, we did have the other economic development in the provinces, but by establishing this department, we thought we will come up with something tangible to say we are moving this direction. These are the solutions. I'm thinking also about the training on the job. To say, as we are having so many graduates, why can't we have just a visible, tangible effort to say that's what as a government we are doing to train the people on the jobs. And if you say about the those who left 7 and you employed 11, I'm tempted to ask, do you have a retaining strategy as the department to say when you have employed people, then you are going to retain those people? And about the capacity building, you spoke about Wits. Why not Mangosuthu? Why not Fort Hare? Why not other university? Why only this? I would like to have other members, Baba Mabaso, Diar, Mama Moshiko, in that order.
Thanks, Governor Chair. The effort I want to express appreciation on is the one of the 100 unemployed graduates to be brought on board. It's a step to be commended. But there was a question that I asked about cooperatives, and I was also relating it to a particular page, so that was not commented on. And the other question I want to ask is, most of the small businesses, when they make efforts to establish themselves, they don't only encounter financial problems, but sometimes they also encounter infrastructure challenges, which do not necessarily are a baby of EDD, but they are most of them babies of ESCOM, municipalities, etc. So what is EDD doing to make sure that those related departments come on board to push the journey with EDD? We often run workshops with a view of having small businesses to start to be helped to get established, and as well as cooperatives. And when I am present in most of these workshops,
I quickly encourage marriage between the department officials and the people that have come to attend the workshops. I usually say, as members of parliament, we cannot always be with you, small business, and the department, we can also not be with you all the time. So what we do encourage is that as people indicate their interest areas of business or their interest areas of cooperatives, we usually say identify the appropriate department official who will work with you. But we say the same thing to the officials. We say, officials, it is your duty to see these people as long-term partners for the long journey, so that when in 6 months time or so, you must be able, when we do meet with you again, the department, we will ask, out of all those people that we brought to the workshop, how many of them have you walked the journey with successfully? Because it will be a disaster if we had run workshops for the sake of running workshops, and then we don't have a tracking device of those people. Some of them will succeed, some of them will need a hand to hold them. So I will ask for comments on that. And that's why we stress that even the officials that get employed, it's important to stress that they must not necessarily be married to the offices. While offices are good tools, but they must be outside sometimes and have a feel of the frustrations that are met by small business people. And the internships and the learnerships, if we could also get comments on that. And I think EDD is one of those departments that have to relate to training institutions, be it universities, be it technicals, so that you can influence the curriculum, and so that you can also be influenced. But the need is more from us, because those people are merely producing graduates. But we have an interest as EDD that they must produce the appropriate graduates. So how can we influence the design of the curriculum so that the product is an appropriate product? I know that jealously universities will want to say it is their sphere of speciality, but we must engage them to say together we can do better. My last point is, if I'm not making a mistake, in Limpopo there were solar heater components that were stolen. People just came with cars, etc., and surrounded an area and stole all those expensive solar heater equipment. And just that the minister is not here, I remember when we discussed this topic, I asked the minister and said, do we have strategies of making sure that these solar heater equipment, as they get installed, they don't also get stolen? And correctly, the minister said the priority is to install them. But I was having a concern that if we don't take that proactive step, so that even if they do steal them, but it must be very, very difficult, because we know they will informed by the stealing of the copper wire, you know, it's a trend. So if you could comment on that. Thanks. I did not get the comments, unless the department says it notes and it will well act on them. Usually, most of these AGs' concerns and the concerns that come from committee, they usually repeat themselves. You may find 25% of them are generic in the sense that they have always been raised. It is in our interest as committee members that the department does not get That's why we raise this, so that steps are taken proactively. Thanks, Comrade Chair.
In that order.
Chairman, I don't think there was a clear response on the three contracts were expired. They do talk about the script tension for us to enhance the quality of performance. And the report also does not indicate as to whether there was an effort to persuade people not to leave when their contract expire, and also the skills they possess, if it is the skills that we so much in need of, or maybe they were just possessing skills that we can get at any given time when we do advertisement. And I think we are in agreement that there is a distinction between a qualified person and a skilled person. But the language we use when we do recruitment, we talk about people who are qualified with a certain experience, but we never, come out explicitly to say even those who do not have the required qualification, but who have the experience or the skills that we require can apply. And again, the issue that was raised already on job training, that people have been there for a longer period. We understand that this is a new department, but I don't think all people, all the staff members are new. There must be people from other departments or maybe the private sector, that people could be identified in terms of their experience, and they be given that on-job training or further training. And having said this, Chair, also we do not have an indication as to whether the department does take intent or not, because it's not indicated here.
That was the answer
to thank you, Chairperson. I'm going to that issue of understanding. I think the initial explanation from the DG was understood, because it based it on the fact that every department gives us of lack of staff. But when it has taken over during the further during elaboration by the gentleman, I didn't really follow what he was saying, because I was talking about the program which understand, and on top of that requested an adjustment. And then the explanation wasn't satisfactory. If it was just left and said we took it that there was new person appointed, and then we'll see the difference, because this is money that was appropriated based on a strategic plan, based on what you submitted in your EME, and the fact that that showed the importance of this program. But collecting words, putting them together, that at the end of the day, Parliament doesn't understand why the money was underspent, spoils everything. It leaves up the question whether do they thoroughly understand what is within this particular program, because for us it is very important, and the explanation that is given must be thoroughly explained why, if it was an elaboration on what the DG said, it should have left us further satisfied, not asking questions. Did they really need that adjustment? Because it was just given and not even next to the expenditure as per quota. And then I think it is really very disappointing. And the fact that another question is, then if such a lot of money is not spent, and the importance of the program is seen by everybody, are you going as a department to ask for a rollover, or are you going to submit
further reasons why there's a need to allocate a certain amount of money for this program, because I was satisfied, but this prompted a lot of questions after further explanation by the gentleman. Thank you.
That was Mama Mashiko. Over to you, DJ.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think I'll just ask Dr. Maheta to elaborate on the solutions that we're thinking about with respect to some of the constraints on youth employment, so that we can address your concern that we're coming with a problem rather than a solution. I think the challenging question is the one who is coordinating employment across other departments. We have been to the committee before with the Department of Performance Monitoring Evaluation to discuss the system that we've created to monitor and evaluate the impact of government programs on and policies on employment creation. And basically we've indicated that government impacts on employment directly through employment in the public service and through short-term employment schemes through the EPWP and the Community Works Program, and then indirectly through the implementation of particular policies and programs. And of course we've identified that if we look at projects that could be employment creating, there's a lot of regulatory burdens that need to be overcome. Not necessarily that the regulation is wrong, but the manner in which departments issue licenses such as water licenses, mining licenses, the manner in which land reform is managed, the issue of environmental impact assessments, all these put a brake on the rapid implementation of projects that would obviously have an employment consequence in them. So we are at the center of coordinating a monitoring system which begins to pick up where the obstacles are, and we have shared that with the committee before. So we do have a central coordinating role in terms of monitoring the uptake, but ultimately it is going to be important that the various departments play their role. So for example, we certainly as EDD through the economics cluster advocated a rapid increase in the uptake of the community works program. We recognize it's a short-term intervention, but at the same time we think that the structures and processes that are set up make the community works program more sustainable than the expanded public works program, and also it involves much more community participation. That's why we've advocated that model. When we've seen obstacles or delays, we certainly raised it right up to the ministerial level and supported DCOG in their engagements with the National Treasury to come up with a business plan which would satisfy the Treasury to increase the amounts of resources in order to reach the level of 1 million people employed through the Community Works Program, which during the MTF period would amount to 400,000 full-time equivalent jobs that are created through that initiative. So I think the overall answer is that yes, we are at the center of coordination, but it depends a lot on the manner in which other departments are able to take up particular recommendations that are made, to implement also decisions that are made. I think one of the things we've been arguing quite strongly is that a lot of the decisions have been taken, the issues around implementation, and we have pointed in our reports to ministers where we see some of the blockages taking place. So I think that's probably the advantage of the national department and the way in which we need to intervene. But that doesn't mean that we are in all cases getting the kind of response retention strategy, I think Mr. Masomaya can talk to that, but certainly we have applied our minds to the whole issue of retention. Why WITS? I think that's a reasonable question. Well, we did partner WITS and we came up with an accredited course, but I think maybe going forward on the basis of that question, we could consider partnering with other universities now that we do have an accredited course that has been developed between ourselves and WITS in the first instance. I think on the cooperatives, again, the policy framework and the implementation machinery for cooperatives does really sit with the DTI, but that doesn't mean we haven't been taking initiatives. So the small business or the small enterprise, social enterprise incubator that we are developing with the University of Johannesburg for the social economy would be one area where we try to directly intervene in order to promote cooperatives. We also are in the process of engaging with the community constituency in NEDLAC to see how we can also facilitate greater support for some of the community-led initiatives in partnering with government. And then I think, again, the solar water heater rollout is an area where we have helped to shape the contracting model, which ESCOM will be using for the mass rollout of solar water heaters. Thus far, about 225,000 solar water heaters have been rolled out. We're still targeting 1 million during the current MTM period. But in those contracts, what's built into the contract is the set aside for cooperatives. So that's one area where we've seen, just in terms of installation and maintenance, a huge potential for cooperative uptake, and the manner in which the contracts will be awarded hopefully will ensure that those opportunities are there for cooperative initiatives to take shape. On the infrastructure, possibly the best, or what would be important is to see what is announced in the SONA and the work which our minister's been pivotal in around the Presidential Infrastructure Coordination Committee, which is very much targeted at the question, which is how do we make sure that infrastructure departments come on board? There have been some decisions which Cabinet has taken, even in the previous administration, around rail, around ports, around electricity, and so on. And the concern has been around implementation. So if one takes the rail question, for example, the concern is why it's necessary to keep repeating a decision year in, year out, and not really seeing implementation. So hopefully the establishment of this Coordinating Commission for Infrastructure under the leadership of the President will put much greater pressure on the infrastructure departments to ensure that they come on board and implement. As raised in the question. We do have particular departmental officials. I think we can make the names available when we make our submission on IDC, certainly from our department side, around small businesses and cooperatives. And these officials are also directly liaising with the institutional instruments which we have at our disposal, SAMAF and COOLA, as well as with the DTI on the cooperative questions over and above the initiatives I've already mentioned. On the internships and learnerships, I think that Mr. Matsomela could just share the policies that we have around that and the steps that we are taking to ensure that we do bring interns on board. Of course, Cabinet has set targets around interns for the entire public service arising out of the 12 action plans from the Lukhudla of July 2011. The whole issue of engagement with training institutions to influence the curriculum, I think certainly it's something we've thought about, and going forward we would need to ensure that we deepen that collaboration and extend the influence which we think best way of taking up this concern would be through the steering committee that we've set up for the rollout of the solar water heaters, where we do have key players on board, and I think it's through that committee that we could raise this particular challenge and perhaps also find out more information that would be of relevance to the committee about how to mitigate that particular risk, how to deal with it, and so on. Certainly on the AG concerns, what we did is, following the last audit, we drew up a checklist, and the CFO may want to elaborate to some extent on that, on the key areas which the Auditor General identified. And then together with the Audit Committee, we are monitoring those particular areas, and we do hold regular meetings with the Auditor General as well, where they give us feedback on where we have successfully begun to deal with the issues, where we need to pull up our socks and so on. So I think the mechanisms are certainly in place, and the concern is there on our side as well to make sure that we do not repeat the kind of problems that have been raised in the first audit report. Mr. Matsumela can elaborate, but we do really try and obviously persuade people not to leave when they give us notice of their intention to leave. But maybe he could give more details on maybe why people are leaving and the challenges we face in trying to persuade people not to leave. And I think then the big question becomes, in the light of the agreement that we need to distinguish between qualification and skills, what really are we doing to try and ensure that we build those skills? So we may bring in people at certain levels. Again, I think as Dr. Mahed has indicated, in the middle management echelon, we have brought in a number of young, talented people, who we are working with quite closely to develop the necessary skills. There are some retention challenges, but also permanent opportunities open up, and some of them are able to apply for those and then to become absorbed on a permanent basis. It still remains a key element of our HR plan and strategy is to bring in talented people at the middle management level who over time can move into the senior management level. Of course, it is a medium and long-term strategy, so it can't deliver results on a quarter-to-quarter basis, but I think we certainly acknowledge all these issues, and we are trying on our side to implement some of the issues that we discussed before, the suggestions coming from the committee. I think Mr. Momeka may want to just clarify some of the issues, but I think very clearly we have this problem on social dialogue, which emanates from our inability to recruit suitable people. There are particular initiatives around employment in this area that are underway, which Mr. Matsumela could maybe give the precise details on. We have a capacity building program in partnership with the unions, and the employment of those people took much longer than we had anticipated, but it's in the pipeline and imminent, which I think will partly address the challenges which are raised in the question, because it means we'll bring in people that we will also deploy to work with the unions through the capacity building program we've agreed with all the three major union federations, to build policy-making capacity to enhance the quality of social dialogue that we are engaged with the unions, and also to ensure that agreements made through the social accords and so on are maybe if my colleagues could comment as requested, particularly Dr. Machetla, Mr. Matomela, and Mr. Momeka. Thank you.
Yeah, on the use of women's stories, I think the aim is to say that we need to build on existing programs and strategies as far as possible around employment creation. And also there are some targeted youth interventions rather than trying to set up completely parallel processes. Given our capacity shortages, but also the need to ensure greater alignment across the state, as has been raised already. I think from that standpoint, the best thing we can do for youth employment is to ensure implementation of the growth path in a more rigorous fashion, because that should lead to greater job creation overall. Having said that, the specific proposals, like I said, are around the CWP and the EPWP. Both of those are supposed to get to over 1 million employment opportunities in the next 2 years. The CWP, for instance, about half the people who are employed there are youth. If we maintain that ratio, you would reduce by 20% the number of job-seeking youth. So that right there would be quite a significant impact on unemployment. EPWP, you have the same targets and ratios. There's also an engagement at NEDLAC around the youth subsidy, which it's anticipated could expand youth employment by something over 100,000. We as EDD, what we've done is we facilitated the engagement in NEDLAC, which is basically stalled. And the challenge there was to get a focus on how we can manage the risk of displacement of older workers and the potential downward pressure on wages in companies that do not get the subsidy. And I think those are genuine concerns, and I think there are some ways to manage the displacement when we haven't really applied our minds to the issue of downward pressure on wages. In other words, the concern that was raised by labor is if one company is able to employ a lot of young people and get the subsidy, they can outcompete other companies with older workers. And so those older workers might lose their jobs. And this is the problem, is that if you have programs that are targeted in the private sector primarily at supporting young people, it has to be in the context of a more rapid increase in employment creation. Now, right now, we're employing jobs quite rapidly, so it wouldn't be such a concern as long as employment is going very rapidly. But there is a risk of displacing older workers otherwise, and that, of course, has its own social and economic consequences. The third thing is, like I said, Tari Fide employs about 30,000 people now doing literacy training. The concern there is more that these are people with the trip. It's been a very successful program, but they are saying that as they sort of reach just about the entire target group of people who need literacy training, that they are thinking of winding it down. We want to encourage them rather to shift that same kind of people can be involved in childcare, which basically, and this arguably goes back to the Labor Market Commission in the mid-90s, both creates employment for people and makes it easier for women with young children to engage in the economy. We are then, like I said, in terms of those are the sort of short-term issues. In terms of the longer-term issues around creating employment specifically for youth, we are still working on specific targets and modalities, because what we would like to do is say, in each jobs driver, what can we do to make the employment created more youth-friendly without actually displacing opportunities for older workers at the same time? And the critical issue there is to say, can we create opportunities for people who don't have experience, either through formal learnership, or just by saying in jobs where it's appropriate, it's not appropriate in all of them, that there are specific targets set for entry-level young people. Secondary around this, of course, linking post-secondary education and training to the jobs driver target so that we can create the skills that are required. Now, we are also, as the department, working with the HRD Council on aligning the growth path with the HRD strategy. So we are sort of from there getting some insights. And what really comes through there is it is more about the sorts of things that are in the green paper on post-secondary education and training, which is we need more quality education and we need more quality training. It's not something you can do through short courses. In the green paper, the 2030 target is 7 million people in FET and 3 million in HET. That would increase the number of people in FET by 20-fold and would double the number of people in universities. And that in itself, like I said, you would see a significant decline in young people who are seeking jobs. The question then is the jobs have to be there when they come out. I think a particular concern for us there is that the public service jobs that we see in the growth path are largely for professionals. So we have to make sure those professionals, so that is education and healthcare, are sufficiently geared up. There is, as Aditi mentioned,
the 5% target for public service internships and learnerships, that would create about 70,000 opportunities. We are trying to also ensure that they go to people who need on-the-job training as part of their degrees from universities in technology and FET programs. And for that, we have to work with the HET and DPSA to implement the specific programs. The guidelines are in place. I mean, there is a DPSA does have norms and standards for internships. The question is really more how we link the people who need the specific kinds of on-the-job training to development departments. And, of course, as you know, we're working with the Department of Public Enterprises and Development State-Owned Enterprises on apprenticeships in the context of the Accord, and that would also form part of the strategy. And generally, the Accord is that whole issue of education is going to be part of the strategy. As you can see, one of the problems is this strategy can include everything to do with youth, and we're trying to figure out where we can indicate that it's part of the strategy without just repeating the whole thing or coming up with something completely different when there's already a strategy in place. There is an issue about entrepreneurship for youth, and I just want to flag this, that, I mean, I do think in terms of the holistic approach or the effort to provide more comprehensive support to small enterprise, really it's the DTI that's driving that through their programs on incubators, and they want to set up 450 incubators over the next few years, some of the partnerships with the private sector. But I do think at the same time we want to be a little cautious about youth entrepreneurship because there is a problem that, you know, being an entrepreneur is by definition risky. You need to have resources and you need to have education and experience. And to push people who are relatively inexperienced and have limited resources into entrepreneurial activities, they can be much more hard hit by the risk. Yeah? And that's why if you look even now, there's a smaller percentage of young people, entrepreneurs, and older people. Part of that is because you want to have the experience so that when you go out, you make a success of it. So I think we don't want to push people into situations where we know they will fail. So, and the fact is most small-scale enterprises go broke within 5 years. That's hard for an older person who can have the resources to fall back on. It's even tougher for a young person in some cases. So we're not saying entrepreneurship is part of it, and we want to ensure that young entrepreneurs have access to those incubators in particular because that is the best opportunity. But I do think we shouldn't sort of be pushing people into it unless we know they're prepared. In terms of childcare, like I said, we want to ensure that all the public employment schemes in Kairavita do more around childcare for people who need it. But we're also asking the Department of Social Development to develop a model of licensed home-based care, which they have in some countries, where they try and ensure that when women are looking after people's kids in their homes, there's some form of supportive regulation so that the conditions are better. And those of you who have kids will know this feeling. You're not deathly scared to leave your child then. In terms of HIV/AIDS, again, that's someplace where a lot of work has been done. I think we would like to work with the Department of Health and the AIDS Council on programs in the schools in particular. Again, this is not so much about saying a new initiative, but making the point that this is a further reason, besides the obvious humanitarian reasons, why we need to address this issue of very rapid increase in infections for young people. And maybe on that basis, we can get somewhat more resources there. The issue isn't just access to information, but also ability to prevent infection. That is specifically for young women being able to say no when appropriate, but also access to condoms on a much larger scale. Okay, so those are basically the main strategies we're looking at. And again, it's often more about aligning existing strategies or giving them more of a youth emphasis than what's there already. I mean, and then the one thing I want to add on the other question, CG, if it's okay, is that in terms of aligning departments around the growth path, the main work we do is just trying to continuously monitor their programs and feedback, and the work with DPME is central to that. But we have also now begun to set up a process where we have an official who, you know, we've gone to private sector and asked them where are there, in fact, specific projects that are being blocked by delays and regulatory problems from the state. And he's trying to work with some of these projects to address those problems. And actually, the biggest blockage is to get the private sector to come with projects. But he is, and then the other thing we want to do is identify through this where there are systemic problems with regulation that we can feed back in and come up with systemic solutions. And I have to say, right now, it's only been a few weeks, but I have to say the biggest systemic problem so far is that we've set up the requirements and the staff isn't there to implement them. So the biggest reason why people aren't getting permits is because, you know, so-and-so left, and then I was out six for 6 weeks, and then one person isn't in the office, and nothing happened. And I think that's something we need to look at more carefully.
Thanks,
contracts that expired, I must indicate that those three contracts were mainly administration. It was not in the core. And efforts were made to retain those particular people. However, they got better offers somewhere out of the province as well, so couldn't really, we're not successful in trying to take them. But we tried in terms of that. And the retention strategy, we have a draft retention strategy now that we're finalizing. And we, as soon as we, because this issue of saying we're losing people and we're getting people, you know, is sort of counterproductive as well. We're trying to address, find various ways of addressing that. But then we welcome the draft retention strategy as well. We hope that we'll be able to find ways how to retain staff. Another program that we are busy with is this one of capacity building with unions. We engage with various unions. They have identified people that we should be able to absorb as well. Interviews have been held, and we are finalizing the issue now currently with various unions in terms of addressing issues that have been raised. And once those issues have been finalized, then they will be on board as well. And so that we are able to assist capacity issues that are core to the department as well. Thanks,
DG, and thanks, Chairperson, and some of our members. The DG has explained very well the issue of AG's remarks. We have definitely put an action plan to make sure that such remarks are not recurring. The action plan is monitored, and I know that the internal audit unit is also looking at it. So, yeah. The issue that was raised by Honorable Member Zotezi, I was really trying to unpack the finance, and allow me to do that. All around, I was trying to unpack do a variance analysis for you, but let me do it in detail. The budget is 16.2 million, and there was an adjustment of 173, which is ICS, protection against inflation on the compensation of employees. That one is collective bargaining approved. So we don't have a control over it. We received it and allocated it accordingly. So that is the adjustment. If you look at the total adjustment budget, we then have in the region of 16.5 million. Of that 16.5 million, 67% is compensation of employees, and 33% is goods and services. All what I was saying was that all these costs are driven by employment. You don't have staff, you will not spend. So I was just trying to marry the underspending with the challenges that have already been mentioned on the employment. And that's all I was trying to explain. Thank you.
Any missing responses?
The missing one is that the workshops, the people that attend workshops. I assume I don't have to repeat it, that tracking them, supporting them, ensuring you don't lose them, holding some with a hand. Because if we don't do that, we will find that we are running workshops for the sake of running workshops, whereas we are interested in the outcomes. And that also includes co-ops. But the co-ops have been answered too, but what I mean is particularly the tracking.
I think let's leave it like that, because I think we did raise with the DG in our last meeting to say we need a schedule which will tell us
it, how many have failed, how many have succeeded, who had the potentials and all that. We spoke about that. I think you have covered Baba Mabaso in when they do that, and then they tell us how many they have workshopped, how are they performing. In fact, that schedule would be able to tell us exactly whether we are making progress. With that, I think unless you feel there is any missing again, if none, I would like to the DG to have some parting words, and then thereafter, Mayor Sodetsi will have a few words before we part. Thanks.
Chair, I think there is a slight misunderstanding, because I was making a follow-up to say that I'm requesting the department to respond to this need. So I was expecting the department to respond, because I take it as something that has not been adequately responded to.
So the chain is overruled. I'll let the department to explain.
Thanks, Chair, and thanks, Honourable Member. So the issue of maybe perhaps not only workshops, maybe generally we should talk about training, you know, holistically, because it's all about that. We do have what we call workplace system in place that has been approved, and we're in the process of implementing it. And I could promise that we could put a schedule together just to be able to show that the training that we've already implemented, the workshops that have been attended and so forth, and the fact that we also have to go back to for the feedback in terms of saying if people have attended courses, are there any progress and so forth? Is there any portfolio of evidence? Because some of the workshops they attend them, then they have also do portfolio of evidence. We are following on those particular issues to ensure that at the end of the day they complete the program as well. But we can be able to avail that information. We do have it.
If you are satisfied, then can we allow the DG to say something? Thanks.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. We've noted all the questions. We've noted a couple of the areas where we need to give you some supplementary information, where we didn't have the information readily available, such as, for example, on the list of the IDC disbursements. I think we've also noted that there are issues that we have discussed repeatedly around challenges of recruitment and retention of adequately skilled staff. So I think these are things that we would need to reflect on as we go away to make sure that at least we don't keep coming and repeating the same issues that you've raised. At the same time, we've also noted your concerns around the employment question, and certainly that motivates us to speed up the processes within the economics cluster and the economic ministers to make sure that at least at the executive level there is engagement with the proposals that officials have been formulating across the system through the cluster on this vexing question of youth employment. I think also we note the questions around coordination and the role which we have in at least trying to push as hard as we can from our perspective at an intergovernmental level, at the national level, as well as through the different spheres to ensure that the policy imperatives that have been agreed through the new growth path are in fact implemented and
that supplementary information, as well as to continue to try and ensure that we recruit, we strengthen our recruitment and retention processes, that we wrap up the numbers, and also that we make sure that the concerns raised by the Auditor General are adequately tracked and dealt with, so that the audit outcome we get in this financial year would be better than the last one. It was a good audit outcome, but we see there's still room for improvement. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I hope you will be there next week when we are being briefed by the